This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Donald Trump's Justice Department has quietly ended a consumer protection program that the Obama administration had put into place and that had been proven to work. Operation Choke Point was meant to protect bank account holders from dubious and fraudulent withdrawals by predatory lenders and others. The program, which began in 2013, held banks accountable for ensuring the protection of their account holders. But the program came under fire from right-wing business interests that complained about government overreach and even claimed that legitimate businesses such as gun sellers were being impacted. My guest is David Dayan, contributor to The Salon and The Intercept and a weekly columnist for The Fiscal Times and The New Republic. He is the author of Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. And he just wrote an article about Operation Choke Point called More Trump Populism. DOJ shuts down an operation that was successfully combating consumer fraud. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you, Sonali.
So how did Operation Choke Point work? Assuming that people probably lobbied hard to get the Obama administration to put it into place to begin with, what exactly did it do and what was the problem it was trying to address?
Right. Well, Operation Choke Point was really just a shift in emphasis on, you know, enforcing existing laws. Banks, under the Bank Secrecy Act and other anti-money laundering statutes, are supposed to raise red flags when certain activity that looks fraudulent happens with their participation. And so what the Department of Justice did was say that they gave a set of guidelines to these banks. If you are processing payments, which is one of the main things banks do, and now that we have all these online transactions, there are all kinds of payments that get processed online that are managed by the banking system. And they said, if you get, you process these payments and you're getting a lot of consumer complaints, you're getting a lot of charge-offs where the charge is reversed, you might be seeing a problem, and you should let us know about it so that we can prosecute that, because this could be fraudulent activity. That's really all Operation Choke Point did. And it was the idea of it being a choke point was, instead of going after these fly-by-night petty thieves who, you know, shut down one day and pop up with a new name the next, if you go after the banks, and hold them accountable for what they're supposed to be doing already, you might have more success. And Operation Choke Point was successful in, first of all, prosecuting banks who were facilitating this illegal activity. And number two, finding these dubious companies who were using third parties to process these payments that were illegal transactions, debits from people's accounts. So it was a fairly successful program, and a rare moment where the Justice Department under Obama was actually getting tough on consumer fraud.
So, of course, nobody likes to have withdrawals from their bank accounts being made by third parties that they didn't authorize. This is something that impacts people regardless of where you fall on the political spectrum. I can't imagine that ordinary Americans, including those who identify as Republican, would have a problem with their banks making sure that they didn't get defrauded in this way. So what were the arguments then that were being made against this operation during Obama's presidency, and who did they come from?
Well, the business community kind of flipped out. They said, you are going after legal businesses that have every right to operate. And what they were referring to was actually just a footnote in a presentation made by the Department of Justice along with the FDIC that said, here are some types of businesses that we see a lot of, you know, this kind of suspicious activity on. And they listed online payday lenders, they listed gun sellers, they listed a few other types of businesses, including sex workers as well. And this was immediately picked up as a cause. And one thing that was really interesting, and it was really kind of a way in which the business community kind of almost blackmailed the DOJ, is the banking industry started to drop legal businesses pointing to this footnote and saying, we have reputational risk and we can't use you as a client, even if those businesses never experienced any of the suspicious activity that DOJ said they were looking for. So there was a very celebrated case a few years ago with a woman who sold condoms online. And she was denied by JPMorgan Chase the ability to process her online payments. And she never had any of the suspicious activity. She never had a chargeback in her entire career. But JPMorgan Chase said, well, we're looking at this footnote, and you might be a business that DOJ will come after us for, so we'll drop you. So they were over-interpreting the statute to try to embarrass the Justice Department, to claim that they were on a witch hunt, that they were being overly aggressive toward legal businesses.
So the banks were doing this on their own to kind of use the DOJ's program against it?
That's right. And in a bid to try to get DOJ to back off and to show Republicans who were against this program.
So the banks were basically saying that this program will make us really scared. Look, we're really scared to take on legitimate business. I mean, they were sabotaging it themselves.
In fact, there was a meeting on Capitol Hill where representatives of third-party payment processors said to legislative staffers on the Democratic side, how would you like it if we cancel businesses that you like right, birth control? So they were obviously doing this deliberately to try to get DOJ to call off the dogs. And DOJ did remove that footnote. Of course, it didn't stop anybody. And inevitably what happens is a new administration comes in, and under Jeff Sessions, this program gets canceled. And so now this is free reign for petty thieves to use the payment system and for banks to sort of look the other way, because they generate enormous fees. There was one case in which a bank called Fair Oaks Bank in North Carolina was facilitating these payment processing for clearly fraudulent activity, and they made $800,000 in fees alone on that one account. So you can see why the banking industry would be interested in keeping this going, and of course why the petty thieves would be interested, because the only way crime pays is that they can extract the payments. So everybody sort of worked together within the business community to make sure that DOJ would be neutralized.
So where do gun sellers come into all of this? So did the program ever actually target gun sellers, or was that just a fig leaf?
Well, like I said, this was in the footnote as an example of a kind of business that might experience this high degree of fraudulent activity. And indeed, online gun sales often do scam customers who are looking to purchase firearms. So it's not ridiculous to assert that you might want to be on the lookout for not just for gun sellers, but for any business, including gun sellers, who might experience this high degree of consumer fraud. But of course, that was taken and run with by pro Second Amendment conservatives who said, see, all this is DOJ looking to shut down businesses that they don't like. That's not what it was at all. But of course, it was a very exploitable and a way to get ordinary Americans who support gun rights to line up with against an initiative that is protecting their rights as consumers.
Wow. So, of course, yeah, anytime you have anything regarding guns, the Gun Proliferation Activists will exaggerate it. Now, did this program, when it was in effect, actually end up fining banks that were allowing this kind of fraudulent activity to such a degree that it really did discourage them?
Well, it did fine that bank in North Carolina,
right.
Fined them $1.2 million on their $800,000 in fees. So it was a rare case of actually fining them more than the money they earned. that's not usually how it goes.
Right.
In Washington.
Right, of course. Usually the penalties are just the cost of doing business, but in this case, it cost them business.
Yes, it actually was an actual penalty. I would say, I mean, the incredible thing is that in this letter, the way we found out that Operation Choke Point was being shut down is as someone at the Department of Justice wrote a letter to a conservative congressman saying that they've stopped initiating this activity. But what they added there was that they did, under the previous administration, issue a bunch of subpoenas to banks to look into this, potential fraudulent conduct. And they said that they did uncover illegal activity. This is in the letter shutting down the program. The DOJ says they did uncover illegal activity and they are continuing with those cases. There's one case against a guy named Scott Tucker, who's a NASCAR driver, who was running an illegal payday lending operation that was charging exorbitant rates, using tribal lands to cite the payday lender and claiming that because it was cited on tribal lands, it wasn't applicable to any of the state consumer protection laws because it was being done online. There's an active prosecution going on against Scott Tucker right now, and Operation Choke Point was, instrumental in uncovering that deception and working on the case. And the Justice Department admits that even as they shut down the same program that gave them the evidence needed to make those cases.
Wow, unbelievable. Now, we still have some measure of consumer advocacy at the federal government, I would hope, with the tenuous existence of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. Was the CFPB doing any of this kind of work that Operation Choke Point was engaged in? Can it pick up where this program, now defunct, left off?
Well, this was more of a Department of Justice initiative. Now, the CFPB does have authorization to make laws and make rules on the payday lending industry, which was one of the major reasons for Operation Choke Point. And in fact, CFPB has a rule that they haven't finalized yet, but can at any time, going after the payday lending industry and adding an ability to pay standard so people don't get trapped in this sort of cycle of debt. You would only be able to grant a payday loan if you actually knew, did some work to see if the customer has the ability to actually pay back the loan. CFPB has some authorities around payday lending. Whether they could actually do a similar kind of crackdown on third-party payments, it's unclear. I mean, the Bank Secrecy Act is not really under their purview. So, it's really more to the banking regulators to handle that, not necessarily the consumer protection arm. So,
Given that the Trump administration, is violating its own promises to protect Americans and being as business friendly as possible, is the CFPB continuing to face threats? Because, of course, this too, like Operation Choke Point, this too was a favored target of the right and right-wing business interests in particular.
CFPB is certainly still under attack. The Trump administration has yet to try to make the case to fire its director, Richard Cordray. There's all this talk that Richard Cordray is going to run for governor of Ohio. So there may be this indication that it's they're just waiting for him to leave the position of CFPB director.
And then all Trump has to do is not appoint somebody else, and it just effectively cripples the agency?
Right. I mean, when Trump gets the ability to appoint, and at the latest he will by the end of July of next year, because that's when Rich Cordray's term is up, then he can install somebody in CFPB that is not really dedicated to its mission. And I think we'd see some scaling back then. For the time being, CFPB is operating pretty much as it has under the Obama administration. They've I think, accumulated about $10 billion that they've returned to consumers over various fraud and abusive acts cases. So right now it's there and it's working, but whether it will remain so is certainly tenuous.
That's amazing. $10 billion returned to consumers. You know, it's amazing that it took so long just to get this agency in place, because it's a very new agency. And of course, it remains under threat. So we assume that Trump would simply replace Cordray with someone like, say, Scott Pruitt at the EPA, somebody who's railed against the agency itself. Who will be in place there to ensure that that agency just doesn't do the work it's supposed to do.
Yeah, it would be the consumer protection version of Scott Pruitt. There's a former congressman named Randy Neugebauer who has authored many of the bills to try to gut the CFPB. He is seen as a leading candidate to come in and replace Richard Cordray at CFPB. So, I mean, there's little question that whoever is tasked with replacing Richard Cordray is going to come in there like a wrecking crew and try to halt as much of its mission as possible. And you know, we'll have to see if it's able to survive that.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your piece about Operation Choke Point from our site later today. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
David Dayan is my guest. He's a contributor to The Salon and The Intercept and a weekly columnist for the Fiscal Times and The New Republic. His book is called Chain of Title: How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. And we've been discussing his latest piece called More Trump Populism: DOJ Shuts Down an Operation That Was Successfully Combating Consumer Fraud. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.